Today's daf is daf tzadi. We're going to start at the Mishnah. Okay, today there's a sheet to go with it. Okay. Kol midot shebemikdash hayu nigdashot. Chutz mishal kohen gadol shahaya godsha letocha. Okay, what does this mean? All the midot in the mikdash, we talked about this before, that the measuring cup itself, it's not that you heaped it, that, you know, let's say you call for a heaping tablespoon, it's not that. It's that the tablespoon itself, let's say it was a tablespoon, okay, in our intents and purposes it was, let's say, an isaron. It's a debate whether this is only talking about the yavesh or also with the lach, but that all the measuring cups were made so that if you filled them up with the overflow, that made up the shiur that you were looking for.
So they were all slightly small.
So exactly. So they were all slightly small. It's hard for us to imagine because we would never make a measuring cup in that way. How exactly they were designed, I'm not 100% sure why they were designed this way exactly. So all of them were nigdashot, chutz mishal kohen gadol, except for the one for the minchat chavitin of the kohen gadol, shaya god shat letocha. In other words, its overflow was inside, meaning basically the whole, right, there was no overflow, it was machuk. Okay, we're going to have a bit of a question about this, because how could you say all the midot were nigdashot when we learned before that only, there was a machlok at Rabbi Meir Chachamim. You can look at the chart already, this is what the Gemara is going to say, but I'll just remind you, according to Rabbi Meir, there was one Yisaron that was Gadush, one Yisaron that was a Machuk. Remember, there were two different Yisaron measuring cups, and there was a Chatzi Yisaron that was Machuk. So it doesn't sound like they were all Gadush except for the Kohen Gadol. I mean, it's true. They were all Gadush except for the Kohen Gadol, but that's because there was only one for everyone else, and one for the Minchat Chavitin of the Kohen Gadol. So it's a little strange. And according to Chachamim, there was only one, and we established it was machuk, because if there was only one, and it had to function for the Kohen Gadol also, right? In other words, he had an Yisaron, only one Yisaron, and a Chatzi Yisaron, and both of them were machuk. They were both exact measurements. So it's going to be a little strange who this Mishnah is going according to. So now, that's the first issue of our Mishnah. The second issue is, midat halach, when you have liquid measurements, Beirut Sehem Kodesh. Okay, the assumption, by the way, is that Kol HaMidot, most people understand that we're talking about the dry measurements, and that's why the Gemara is going to raise the issue about the Yisaron. Midat Halach, when you have the liquid measurements, Beirut Sehem Kodesh. Remember, what overflows and falls out is going to be sanctified. Umidat HaYavesh, Beirut Sehem Chol. And anything that falls out of the regular, okay, we're going to see a three-way machloket here. We're going to have to explain the opinions. You can again look at the chart. On the chart, I wrote their opinions and the explanations given in the Gemara already. So according to Tanakama, the overflow, everything that falls over the sides of the liquid measuring cup is going to be kodesh, and anything that overflows in the dry measuring cup is going to be chol, not sanctified. Again, right now we don't really know why the different opinions say this. The second opinion is Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva omer, midat halach kodesh, lefichach beirutzehen kodesh. The liquid measuring cups were sanctified, meaning, right, they were anointed with the Shemen HaMishcha, and they were sanctified, and that's why their overflow is sanctified, because they were themselves kodesh. But midat hayavesh chol. But the dry measuring cups, the Yisaron, the Chatzi Yisaron, they were all chol. They were never sanctified with Shemen HaMishcha. Lefichach berutzehen chol. Rabbi Yossi omer, lo mishum ze, that's not the reason. Okay, right? Instead of just saying his opinion, he says, no, you're wrong. Ela shehalach ne'ekar v'hayavesh eno ne'ekar. Okay, the best word to describe ne'ekar here means displaced. Okay, there's displacement of the liquids. In other words, the liquids end up, the ones that are in the overflow, since in liquid everything kind of mixes up, you can't distinguish between what was in the overflow. The overflow at some point was probably in the kli, and then it just got moved around. Whereas in solids, if you fill up, right, we could have done this actually, right, and you fill up the solid, anything that's in the overflow part was not ever in the kli. There's no displacement. But there is displacement in the liquids. Okay, so now the Gemara starts off. We're going to go back to the first issue, which was, Kol HaMidot Shebemikdash Hayu Nigdashot. So the Gemara says, Mani, who is this according to? E Rabbi Meir Cha Gadush Hava. If Rabbi Meir, only one of them, right? One out of the three that he held was Gadush. E Rabbanan, according to Rabbanan, there was only one, right? One out of two, really, but one Yisaron. Umachuk Hava, and it was Machuk, it wasn't Gadush. Amrav Chistelol, I'm Rabbi Meir, it must be Rabbi Meir. Umay Kol Midot, Kol Mididot. all the measurements, not all the measuring cups. Every time you measured it in the gadush one, in the overflow cup. But except for the one case, which was the minchat chavitin, the kohen gadol, which got measured in the other measuring cups, which were mechukim. Okay, so that's the debate between them. That's the way to understand the Mishnah, so that it makes sense in light of what we learned earlier. Now we're going to get back to this three-way machloket about the berutzim. Midat halach berutzehen kodesh. B'maykam iflege. So what's the root of their machloket? Tanakama savar. So now we're going to see that there was a big debate about how, number one, were the kelim nimshachim? Number two, how were they nimshachim? Okay? They could be nimshachim only on the inside, or also the outside of the kli was sanctified. So Tanakama savar, midat halach nimshacha beimi bifnim beimi bachutz. Okay, according to Tanakama, the liquid measuring cup was anointed both on the inside and the outside, and therefore both the inside and the outside were kodesh, so anything that goes on the outside is going to be sanctified. Midat yavesh nimshacha mibifnim velo nimshacha mibachutz. But the dry measuring cup was only anointed on the inside and not on the outside. Okay, and that's why anything that overflows on the midat halach is sanctified because it touched the outside of the kli. Anything that was in the yavesh is not sanctified because it touched the outside of the kli and the outside wasn't sanctified. Rabbi Akiva savar midat halach nimshacha beim mibifnim beim mibachutz. Midat yavesh lo nimshacha kol ikar. He claims that the dry measuring cup was not sanctified at all. Okay, in general, what was the dry measuring cup used for? It was used for the solet. Generally, the solet wasn't the part that was sanctified, right? Talk about the shemen being sanctified, different parts, but the solet wasn't sanctified at that point. Rabbi Yossi Savar, Idi v'idi nimshecha mibifnim v'lo nimshecha mibachutz. He says both of them. What do you mean? You don't sanctify the outside of a kli. You sanctify the inside of the kli. Because the kli is all about what it holds inside.
You sanctify the kli,
but the question is, what is a kli? A kli is meant for what's inside the kli. So therefore, the outside's not sanctified. However, why does he think that the lach? And then it goes back to the displacement, exactly. It was inside. Since it's displaced, it comes from the inside of the kli. And the yavesh isn't displaced, okay? And therefore, that's the situation, right? The yavesh never gets displaced. So now they say, and therefore was never sanctified, because it has to be actually inside the kli in order to become sanctified. So now the Gemara asks, v'chine ekar, they're going to ask on Rabbi Yossi. V'chine ekar, my have. Even if it was displaced, who cares? Like, what's the difference? Who cares? Gavra l'may ditzarech kamachave. Ah, wait, didn't we talk about this at some point, that in order to sanctify something in a kli kodesh, you have to have had intent that you wanted it to be sanctified. Now, when you poured in your liquid, you didn't intend for the overflow to be sanctified, you only intended, so even if it went into the kli and now it's at the top, your intent was never that that part becomes sanctified. Now, it's a little bit tricky because it's not like you intended exactly that part, and okay, but in general, what they want to say is, if you have an Isaro measuring cup, and you put in an Isaro and a bit more, you really never intended for the bit more to be sanctified. So how could it be sanctified without your having dot? Okay, so now, what are we going to answer? One answer is to say, Amar Rav Dimi, Barshishna, I guess that's how you pronounce it, Mishmei Derav, Zot Omeret, Klei Sharet Mekadshin Shalomi Dat. This teaches us that in fact, it's not true that you need da'at in order to sanctify. If anything ends up in a kli sharet, whether you intended it to be sanctified or not, it becomes sanctified. Okay, so that's one approach. Ravina Amar, no, I disagree with you. La'olam eim alacha kli sharet, or kli sharet eim kachin elamidat. It only sanctifies what you intended. And really, this overflow part of the liquid is not sanctified. Even though it was inside, at some point, you never intended to sanctify it. It's now not sanctified. It's a little bit like Brera. Like at this point, now that it's at the top, it shows that you never really, right now you could say retroactively, I never intended for that to be sanctified. It's not actually sanctified. So therefore, why does Rabbi Yossi say that midat halach berutzehen kodesh? So what's the reason? It's for a gzera. Ugzera shema yomru motziim mikle sharet lechol. People will see you take the overflow out of this kli and use it for whole purposes, and they'll see that it was liquid. They'll realize that liquid at some point was inside, and they'll assume that you're allowed to take things that were in the kli and use them for chol purposes, and they'll misunderstand. Okay, so now they're going to ask a question on Ravina and say, wait a minute, you're worried about a gzera of what? Again, this is always the maridayin question. When are we concerned for what people will see and misconstrue and make a mistake about? So the mistake here is that people will see you taking out the overflow, using it for chol purposes, and think that something that was inside a kli sharet is allowed to be used for chol purposes. Now, they're going to say, motiv Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Zeira, here there's again a chart where I charted out where Ravina said, Rabbi Zeira brings a Mishnah, okay, brings a Mishnah from further on the Masechet. He brings a Mishnah that says like this, Sider et ha-lechem ve'et ha-bezichin la'achar ha-shabbat. Okay, let's go back to the lechem apanim. How does it work? On Shabbat, they would take off the old bread, put in the new bread. Remember, they were kohanim moving it, right? So they would never be without anything. One would move it off, one would move it in right away. And one group of kohanim, one group. So in general, what would they do? They would put the bread on the table, and then they would put the bowls with the frankincense on it. Now, that was always done on Shabbat. If you did it after Shabbat, okay, so you did it Sunday, let's say. You didn't do it on Shabbat. You did it on Sunday. So now what happens? So if Sider et ha-lechem ve'et ha-bzichim la'achar Shabbat, v'iktir et ha-bzichim b'Shabbat, and then the next Shabbat comes, and what are you supposed to do when you take the bread off and the bezichim? You're supposed to burn the frankincense that's in those bowls. So if you burn it the next Shabbat, in which case what happened?
It hasn't been there long enough.
So psula. Okay? So it's disqualified because you didn't have it there long enough. So ketzad yaseh. So what should you do then in that case? Because you have to burn it at some point. So what do? Yinichena l'shabbat haba'a. You leave it for the next Shabbat. Okay, so you basically leave it on there a week and 6 days. Okay? Sha'afilu hu al shulchan yamim rabim ein b'kach klum. Even if it sits on the shulchan for longer than it's supposed to, that's okay. Okay, which is interesting because generally what do we say? Things are psulina, right? Once the time has passed, so the night kicks in and it messes it up. But this, it's okay. Okay, we're going to basically say as long as it's on the shulchan, it can stay there many days and then you can burn the bezichim after, the livona after. Now here comes the question. Why is this allowed? According to Ravina, what are we concerned? That people will see you taking out the extra overflow from the kli and think, oh, I can use anything that was in a kli sharet for chol. So what about this case? What's the gzera here? What should we be worried about? It's the same type, it's a different type issue, but it's also people will see that you left these bezichim on the table for a week and 6 days, and what will they assume? They'll assume that you can do this for all sorts of things. What will they say? Gzera shema yomru mafkidim b'klei sharet. People might think, okay, I'm going to give you two different interpretations of what people might think here, okay, depending on your interpretation. There's a few different ways of understanding. Mafkidi means you, like a shomer, right? A pikadon, something somebody watches. So you might think that you can leave things to be stored in a kli sharet, use it kind of for storage purposes. That's not the main interpretation, but I'm going to start with that one just because that's the root of mafkidim. So you might think that if you need to leave something, you know, you're allowed to use kli sharet to store things as a storage area. Because you know, they'll see, you have the bezichim from last week, and you have the bezichim of this week. The bezichim of last week seemed to be unnecessary, right? They'll say, oh, I guess they're just storing it there. And that obviously we don't want people to think, what?
On top of the lechem apanim.
Right. We certainly don't want people to think that you can use a shulchan as a storage place. Also, okay, or that alternatively, you could say that people might think that in order to avoid the psul of lina, if you leave something in a kli sharet, that prevents the disqualification of overnight from disqualifying it. And that's not the case. Just because you leave something in a kli sharet doesn't mean, right? Like, let's say you didn't sacrifice you prepared your korban, you didn't sacrifice, and you left it in a kli sharet. Well, so it's okay to sacrifice the next day, and that doesn't help you. Okay, so two different possibilities. Either which way, what do we want to say? Why are we worried about Xera in the case of Ravina with the Beirut Semidot? But we're not worried, right? We're worried people will misconstrue. But we're not worried in this case. And we say you can leave the bezichim and we don't care. We're not worried about what people are going to think. So what's the obvious answer? Pnim achutz karamit? What, you're talking about something that happens inside the Hechal and you're raising that as a question, something that happens outside the Hechal. How much traffic is there inside the Hechal? What people are actually seeing, what goes on there, right? Pnim... inside the Hechal on the Shulchan, Lav Kuleyama Yadeh. Most people don't know about it. chutz kulei alma yadei. It's interesting to say that everybody knows what's going on in the chutz area, the area outside the Eichal. It's not like everybody was in the Beit HaMikdash all the time. But the point is, that's a more populated place, and therefore we're more concerned about marit ayin, or what people might misconstrue, in a public place rather than in a more private place. Tnan hatam. Now we're going to bring another Mishnah. Motar nisachim leketz hamizbech. Okay, the extra nisachim, whatever you have left of the nisachim, it's a Mishnah in Shkalim, go for ketz hamizbech. What's ketz hamizbech? Okay, we have to remember, we've learned this. It's when the mizbech is not being used for anything. We don't want it to be not used for anything, and therefore we sacrifice korbanot nidava. Okay, we take money that was left, you know, take things that were left over, so to speak, or money from things, and we use it to purchase. Sometimes if you have things that are disqualified, we change the money, and then we use it to purchase these olot that we were burned on the mizbech. So likewise, when you have extra nisachim, we're going to talk in a minute, what does it mean, extra nisachim? Because generally, you would pour it all. So what does it mean, extra? So extra nisachim would be sold and then used for buying these sacrifices for ketz hamizbech. Okay, I'll give you two etymologies of the word ketz hamizbech, why it comes from there. One is that it's figs, and figs are sweet, and it's like kind of, you know, like dessert almost, right? Something sweet for the mizbech, that the mizbech should always have something on it. Some is like the end, I think, of the... That's maybe one interpretation I'm trying to remember. Right, ketz haynu debalut. Kadam shemaviim loves. No, that's the dessert one. I forget what the other one. Okay, some other interpretations given, but that's the best root of ketz being figs. Okay, now they say, so what are these my motar nisachim? What are these leftover nisachim? What does that mean? So this is a machloket. Okay, again, I chart it out at the bottom of your sheet. Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef Amar Beirutse Midot. Ah, now we know why we're talking about this here. Because what's the extra nisachim? It's whatever fell out of, right? Whatever overflowed. The overflow that you don't need for the, right, for whatever you're doing. So all those overflows which are sanctified are now motar nisachim, and you can sell them and then use the proceeds to buy sacrifices. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, right, I guess you'd have to add up a lot of them because I'm assuming there wasn't a huge overflow. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Ko'otasha Shaninu, okay, this said in another source, Tanaitic source, HaMekabel Alav, okay, this is a totally different issue, nothing to do with Beirut Semi Dot, it's what Motar Nisachim are. HaMekabel Alav L'Sapek Saltot Me'arba V'amdu B'Shalosh Yisapek Me'arba. If the gizbar of the Beit HaMikdash goes to buy, and he makes an agreement with someone that he's going to buy the solet for four se'ah, se'la, or whatever the price is, right? For a certain price. V'amdu b'shalosh, and the prices went up in the meantime, right? By the time the guy brought the solet to him, right? This classic, you'd order something, and in the time before he gets it, right? This is like when you order online, and you order, let's say you do your shopping, your food shopping online, okay? Different from, let's say, Amazon order or something like that. There you buy it at the time. But you do your food shopping order online, sometimes it comes a day or two later. Now, what if the price is changed in the interim? Because they, you know, what they do is they don't charge you everything at the moment you buy it, because depending if you buy vegetables and fruits, and they might not have everything and whatever it is, so they can't do it then, they do it later. Now, later, right, they always say you're locked in, right? If the sales are today, then you're locked into the sale. And if the, right, whatever the price is today, you're locked into this price from the moment that you, even if the prices go up, go down, it doesn't matter. So that's the exact same thing here. If you say you're going to buy, you're going to get four for a sella, and now they're three for a sella, yisapek me'arba, you're going to get your four for the sella, for that same sella, okay? But if it's mishalosh, if it was three for a sella, v'amdu me'arba, and then the price changed, okay, that now you can get more for your money, so generally, right, in the food store order, that wouldn't work to your favor. But in this case, misapek me'arba. We're going to say the bedek habayit always wins out, okay? Sheyad hekdesh ala elyona. So if the prices went down, you're going to now get more for what you wanted. Now, at this point, what happened? You really wanted three. So you ended up with three. That's what you needed. You needed three same of solet. That was for your nisachim. The fourth, the extra one, is now called motar nisachim. That extra that you gain by this change of fluctuation in price now is called motar nesachim. What do? You now sell it and you use the proceeds to buy korbanot for the ketz hamizbech. Okay, so two options about what the motar nesachim are. One has to do with our sugyu beirutei midot, and that's why we brought it. The other one is something totally different. Tanya kavatei de Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef, Tanya kavatei de Rabbi Yochanan. Now, even though this is a machloket between emoraim, we're going to see that there's actually an earlier machloket than the Tanaitic sources about the exact same thing. Tanya kavatei de Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef. Here's the brayta that goes like Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef. Beirutei midot halalu ma hayu osim bahem. What would they do with these extra overflows? Im yesh zevach acher yakrivu imo. If there was another sacrifice going that day, then they would just add it to those nesachim, and it would go with that. V'imlanu, if you left it overnight, yipaslu belina, they would be disqualified. V'imlav, but if you didn't leave it overnight, and there was no zevach, what would you do, right? If there was no zevach, and you dealt with it properly, what would you do to deal with it properly? Mikitzim behem et hamizbech. You would sell it that day, and then you'd be able to use it for the ketz hamizbech. The ketzem mahu, and what is this ketzem mizbeach? Here the Brayta explains. Olot, they were olot, okay? They were treated as korbanot ola, which meant habasar lashem v'haorot lakohanim, right? The meat went got burned entirely, and the hides would go to the kohanim, like we've seen many times about the korban ola. Tanya kavatei de Rabbi Yochanan. Here's a Brayta to support Rabbi Yochanan. Hamekabel alav lesapek saltot me'arba v'amdu mishalosh mesapek me'arba. Mishalosh v'amdu me'arba, mesapek me'arba. Sheyad hektesh ala elyona. V'zehu sheshaninu. Here the Brayta says it explicitly. Zehu sheshaninu motar nesachim leketz hamizbech. So he says the exact same thing Rabbi Yochanan does, right? The Brayta gives that whole halacha, and then that Brayta connects that halacha with the motar nesachim. Okay, and that's Rabbi Yochanan himself just said, oh, it must be from there, but this Brayta says this is exactly it. Okay? So there's your proof. Again, neither one can prove 100% because each one has a proof that says something different. In theory, one could say maybe both are motar nesachim, right? These are both cases of they could be understood as both of these would go. It's not like one; they're not mutually exclusive. Okay, you could have both. In fact, Mishnah kol korbanot tzibur v'hayachid teunim nesachim. Okay, turn over your sheet to the second side. Okay, we're going to now talk about which korbanot ni nesachim. I quoted you here the pasuk in Bamidbar Tevav, pasuk gimel, where the nesachim are discussed. It says, "Va'asitem ishe laHashem ola o zevach lefalei neder o b'nadera o b'moadechem la'asor reach nichoach laHashem min habakar u'minatzon." And then it proceeds to say, you bring nesachim for these things. So we're going to darshan this pasuk to figure out which korbanot need nesachim and which ones don't. Okay, so here goes. So the Mishnah, again, doesn't darshan the pasuk. The Mishnah just tells us the halacha. Kol korbanot ha-tzibur v'ayachid tu'unim nesachim. Chutz min, except for who? Which ones? The b'chor, ha-b'chor, okay, b'chor be'ema, v'ha-ma'aser, aser be'ema, ha-pesach, korban pesach, chatat, ha-chatat v'ha-asham, the korban, the sin offerings. Okay, the sin and the guilt offerings. Ela, except there's two exceptions to this rule. We learned that yesterday, right? The chatat and the asham of the mitzorah need nesachim. We talked only about the asham, but the chatat also that he brings needs nesachim. So basically the way it works is like this. We have all communal offerings, all individual offerings, except for the following ones, b'chor, maaser, behema, pesach, chatat, and asham. Other than, we're going to take out the asham of the mitzorah and the chatat of the mitzorah that does need nesachim. Okay, that it says it explicitly in the psukim. Tanu Rabbanan, right? Just those two about the mitzorah and the mitzorah. It says it in the psukim. Tanu Rabbanan. So now we're going to bring a bright to the Gemara. Is going to bring a bright to where it darshens all the same. Basita Mishel Hashem. Yachol kol ha'olel ishim yehetu nesachim. Okay, the pasuk starts out. You burn something. Mishel Hashem means you burn something to God from the lashon of esh. So you make something. You burn something to God. It sounds like this would include anything that gets burned. Yehitahu nesachim. Afilu mincha. Maybe even a mincha needs nesachim. Now, what does it mean a mincha needs nesachim? A mincha is a nesach, right? A mincha, remember we talked about it. Every time we say niskehem, ribi itahin, or niskehem, what does it mean? Yayin and the shemen for the mincha. So obviously what they mean here is that if you bring a mincha offering, maybe you would need to bring the wine libation. They obviously don't mean you're going to need to bring a mincha with a mincha, right? Then it becomes like a half-life, and the davar sof, right? Every mincha is going to need another mincha, or right? It's like you'll go on to infinity. So now, exactly like a half-life, but you know that there's continual, it will never end. So now we're going to say, you might have thought, maybe nisachim, maybe the mincha needs to be brought with a wine libation. Talmud lomar, ola. Therefore it says, v'asikti mishel la'ashem, and now it starts off, ola. Okay, so from the word ola, I charted this out, we're going to learn that mincha doesn't need nisachim. Shlamim minayin, where do we learn that a korban shlamim needs nisachim? Talmud lomar, zevach, right? What's the next word? Ola or zevach. Okay, zevach includes a korban shlamim. We've seen that many times. Zevach shlamim, right? It always refers to the... We've seen zevach means any kind of animal sacrifice, but zevach also is very often referring to the shlamim. Todah minayin, how do you know the korban todah, which is a type of shlamim, but treated not always the same as a korban shlamim. There's different aspects of it. So how do we know the todah also is included, that you need nisachim? Talmud lamar, o zevach. The word o comes to include something additional, right? It could have just said ola v'zevach, said o zevach to include the todah. Now we're going to, okay, some of these drashot are going to include things and some of them are going to exclude. Now we're going to exclude. Yachol shani marbe'af b'chor u'ma'aser u'pesach v'chatat ba'asham. Right, all the ones that we excluded, maybe you would think to include them. Talmud lamar, because it says zevach, which is kind of any sacrifice. Talmud lamar, lefalei neder o b'nidava. Right, lefalei means to express in a neder or a nidava, right? Some type of voluntary offering, remember the difference? Right, harei alai, I have to bring. Or harezo, this I have to, right, this I'm committing to bringing. Ba b'neder unidava ta'unisachim. She'ena ba b'neder unidava ein ta'unisachim. So now what do we say? Any type of offering that can be brought voluntarily, because that's the common denominator between neder and nidava, needs nisachim. But if it can't be brought voluntarily, and that's the b'chor maser, you can't just say, I'm going to take this animal and bring it as a korban b'chor. There's no such thing. Only the b'chor is only the maser. Only, right, all these, the chatap yasham only come if you did something wrong. Therefore, they're not ta'unim nisachim. Okay, now we're going to go back to include. Mashmalo tziyat elu. Okay, so once we're going to, okay, we understand we're going to get rid of those. So then, let's come up with other ones that are chovot, and let's exclude them also. Otziyat chovot haba'ot machmat haregel baregel. What about all the korbanot that are brought on the holidays that have to be brought for the holiday? Like the olat ri'iyah, the ones you have to bring when you eat them, right? You have to go to see God at the Beit HaMikdash, and you have to bring olot. Okay, umaynihu, olot ri'iyah b'shamei chagigah. And the korbanot shlamim that you're supposed to bring as a korban chagigah on the holidays. Maybe those wouldn't need nisachim. Talmud lamar, o b'moadechem. Okay, let's continue in the pasuk. After lefale b'neder b'nidava, it says o b'moadechem. Moadechem means your times. What we always say, moadim are chagim. So therefore, it teaches you kol haba b'moadechem ta'un nisachim. Okay, anything that comes on the holidays needs nisachim. By the way, why would you not bring nisachim with the chatat offerings and the asham? We've talked about this before in a different context. That we talked about with the mincha, right? That you wouldn't add shemen to those minachot because we don't want to make it look nice. They're not supposed to be so nice. So again, we don't want to bring these gift offerings with the sin offering because we don't want it to look so nice. Okay, so now, mashmalaviyat elu. So once we're adding all the moadim, well then there's other things on the moed that we don't bring nisachim. Aviz si'irei chatat. What about the si'irim that we bring on all the chagim for chatat? Remember, we learned all about that in Masechet Shvuot, right? About the, and in Horayot, right? Which, I think it was in Horayot. About all the si'irei chatat that you bring, right? And what are the ones that you bring? There's ones you bring on every chag, there's ones you bring on Rosh Chodesh, apropos today, right? We bring a si'irei chatat, right? They're all about yediot hatumah, right? Things that we didn't know we did it, we didn't, right? We didn't know we came to Taman to the Beit HaMikdash, we didn't know all different types of Choser Yediyah, there was a whole big machlok at which one goes for what. So maybe the Sirei Chatat should be included, because they're obligatory offerings of the holiday. It should be included in Moadechem. So where do we learn that we don't bring Nisachim with the Sirei Chatat? Talmud Lamar, V'chi ta'aseh ben bakar. Okay, this is the pasuk in pasuk Chet of that same parak. It says, V'chi ta'aseh ben bakar, ola o zevach lefalei neder o shlamim la'ashem. So what do they learn from Ben Bakar? Ben Bakar bechlal haya, right? Ben Bakar, we were talking about any animal. So lama yatsa, so why did they specify specifically a Ben Bakar? La kishelav, to make a hakesh and say, ma Ben Bakar miyuchad, ba b'neder u'nidava, Av kol ba b'neder u'nedava. Therefore, it's only going to be offerings that a ben bakar can be brought as a voluntary offering. So therefore, we're going to learn only something that can potentially come as a voluntary offering, like an ola or a shlamim. The ola riyan, the shlamei chagiga, the type is an ola and the type is a shlamim. Those are types that can come as voluntary offerings, not on the chag, but they, you know, first of all, people did bring ola riyan, they brought olot on the chag and they brought shlamim on the chag. Okay, those can come in Yadro Nedeva. But Chatat can never come as a voluntary offering. So therefore, the Seir L'Chatat that was brought on a Chag doesn't have Nesachim. Okay, next, now we're going to darshan the last section of that Pasuk. Okay, La'asot Reach Nechoach La'Hashem Min HaBakar O Min HaTzon. Okay, so now, it seems weird. Why are we adding here Min HaBakar O Min HaTzon? Ma Tamud Lomar Lefi Shenemar Ola Shomea Ani Afilu Ola Ta'of B'mashma Tamud Lomar Min HaBakar O Min HaTzon Dever Rabbi Yoshe. We're going to have a machloka between Rabbi Yoshe and Rabbi Yonatan about what we darshan. He says, why does it say Min HaBakar O Min HaTzon? Because since it said Ola, what might you think? It might include an Ola of a bird. You know that there's Ola Ta'of. We've learned about that many times. So maybe this would also include Ola Ta'of would be Nisachim. Comes the words Min HaBakar O Min HaTzon to Tishu. It's not the Of. Of, you don't bring. Rabbi Yonatan Omer, Eino Tzarich, you don't need a drasha to exclude the Olat Ha'of. Harei Omer, Zevach Ve'of. Zevach. Harei Omer, Zevach Ve'of, Eino Zevach. Zevach means animal sacrifices. So once you say the word Zevach, we know that we're only including animals. So, according to him now, Im Kem Matam Lomar Min HaBakar U'Min HaTzon. So what's the purpose of writing Min HaBakar U'Min HaTzon? So now he's going to bring it for a totally different halacha, not having to do with Nesachim. Lefi Shenemar, okay, if you go back now to the beginning of Sefer Vayikra, if you remember, we've talked about this, it starts off in Vayikra and it says if you're going to bring, okay, Adam ki yakriv rim perek alek pasuk bet, mamash the beginning, Daber b'nei Yisrael v'amarta lehem, Adam ki yakriv mikem korban la'ashem, min ha-beima, min ha-bakar u-min ha-tzon takriv rim korban chet. If you're going to bring a korban min ha-beima, how should you bring it? Min ha-bakar u-min ha-tzon, okay? And then it proceeds, say, Im min ha-bakar, this is what you do. Im min ha-tzon, this is what you do. The classic way of understanding this is, right, we have a pasuk that says behema, right? If you were writing nikud, what would you do? You would put two dots, and then you would, you know, if you're writing it on the computer, you would bullet it. There's min ha-bakar option, and then there's min ha-tzon, right? And then later on in the Torah, right, a few pasukim later, it says, Im min ha-bakar, then this is what you do. And Im min ha-tzon, this is what you do. Okay? But comes from Yonatan, he says, not so clear I would have understood it like that. Okay? What might you understand from here? Think about it. Min ha-beima, min ha-bakar, min ha-tzon, and min ha-tzon. Yachol ha-omer harei alai ola. So you might have thought if somebody says, I'm going to bring an ola, that's what the subject of this pasuk is, a korban ola. I'm going to bring an ola. What might he have to bring? Yavi mishnehem. Because it says, min ha-bakar, min ha-tzon, you might have thought the Vav comes to say you actually have to bring both. Rabbi Yonatan, I skipped. Talmud Lomar, therefore our Pasuk, when it talks about again Bakar and Tzon, what does it say? Min HaBakar O Min HaTzon. Ratza Achad Mevi. Ratza Shnayim Mevi. So our Pasuk comes to explain that Pasuk, which is quite strange. We're now in Pasuk Perek Tev Vav, and we're going back to explain something earlier. But it's using the same phraseology, but without, right, instead of the Vav, it uses an O. Now, in the Torah, sometimes Vav is used as O, and that's kind of the debate here. Is it sometimes, right? So this is coming, according to Rabbi Yonatan, since Vav could mean really N, Kipshuto, therefore this comes to teach you that the Vav there doesn't really mean O, it doesn't mean end, it means or. Okay, you can bring only one or the other. For Rabbi Yonatan, lama likra. So why do you need a pasuk to tell you this? Ha Amar, doesn't he himself say? In other words, now there's a whole thing about how we view vav. Doesn't Rabbi Yonatan himself say ad shifrot l'cha katuv yachdav that generally vav means o unless it says yachdav? Where does it say yachdav? Right? It's in kilayim. Lo eva. A second, I just have to find it. Okay, right. First of all, I forgot to mention this. The place where he says this, Ad Shifro L'cha Ketuv Yachdav, is from a very famous pasuk. Ish Asher Yekalel Et Aviv Ve'et Imo Mot Yumat. Okay? Here, what? You get the death penalty for cursing your parents. Now, do you have to curse both your parents? It sounds like you have to curse both your parents. So it comes from Yonatan. He says, no. Vim means O, unless the only way it doesn't is if it says, Lo tachrosh b'shor uvachamor yachdav. Right? You can't work both those animals together. A shor and a chamor can't work together. There it says yachdav. That means, there the vav means together. Shor, right? Shor v'chamor yachdav. Okay, but if it doesn't say yachdav, it's going to mean separate. So why in this case would he assume the vav means together? It didn't say yachdav. So he's going to have to say this pasuk is a bit of an exception, and you might have thought. Salkadata chamina, ho'ilu katuv uminatzon, kiman dichtiv yachdav dame. Okay, he says that since it says mina bakar uminatzon, you might have thought that, right, it should have just said, how should the pasuk have read? How did I write it? Let's even take that. I wrote behema colon, bullet, min habakar, second bullet, min hatzon. So the Torah should have written, min habakar, min hatzon. The fact that it said vi, right, it didn't even need the vav there if it wanted to say the pshat. Therefore, there was reason to suspect that maybe the vav really means end. And therefore, in this case specifically, you would need it to be, you need a different drasha to explain that it's not end, it's or. But in all other cases, you wouldn't really. Vav is always or. Ula Rabbi Yoshia, I'm just going to go on a little more and finish this section. Ula Rabbi Yoshia de Amar. Now, Rabbi Yoshia and that other pasuk thought, even if it doesn't say yachdav, it's as if they're yachdav. So according to him, libay kra, you would need the our pasuk of o minatzon to teach you about this. You would need it all the more so, right? What they're showing is that Rabbi Yonatan and Rabbi Yoshia, their opinions in the other place seem to go crisscross with their opinions here. They don't seem to match up at all. He's the one who should really need a pasuk. Haktiv, im ola korbano min abakar, v'im minatzon korbano. Okay, what does he say? Ah, no, you don't need it because haktiv, it says, when it says in the later pasuk, im min abakar, im minatzon, it's already obvious that we're talking about if you do, right? And as like I said from the beginning, if you read the pshat, that's what it seems like. Since it says later, im min abakar, im minatzon, it seems obvious that when it said min abakar, u minatzon, it meant these are two possibilities because the Torah then went to describe the two possibilities. So now if that's the case, we're back to Rabbi Yonatan. Why doesn't he think there's just two possibilities, right, from the later part? V'idach itzdrich. No, you would still need it. Kesalkadata chamina hanemile b'mefarish. Ava b'stama leite mitravayu kamash malan. Okay, we'll end here. What does he mean? He means you might have read the Torah like this, according to Rabbi Yonatan, if you didn't have the drashah in Perek Tet Vav. What might you have thought? There's one option if you want to bring a behema. If you just say, I'm bringing a behema, then you have to bring mina bakar uminatzon from the beginning part, because it said Vav. Again, you don't, but this is what you might have thought had we not had the drashah in Tet Vav. When the Torah then, right after, says, imina bakar, iminatzon, that's a different situation. One situation is you just said, I'm going to bring an ola. When you bring an ola, you would have to bring both a bakar and its own. If you would specifically say, imina bakar, you say, I'm bringing a korban ola of a bakar, then you would do this. And iminatzon, then you would only bring one. But if you just said something stam, without specifying, you would have to bring two. That's what you might have thought. And therefore, you need the pasuk in our pasuk to teach you about that. And again, that was all to say, it doesn't teach you anything about this, right? That was the machloka between them. Is min habakar o minatzon, does it exclude the olah ha'of? Okay, if you remember where we started, does it exclude olah ha'of according to Rabbi Yoshia? Or according to Rabbi Yonatan, it doesn't exclude olah ha'of. Olah ha'of is excluded from zevach, and you need it for the beginning of Sefer Vayikra to know about a regular person who just says, I'm bringing an olah, only needs to bring one or the other. So,